On today's Contract 2020 TA Education, I'll be speaking with Damien Jeanette about Section 5, Retirement. All right, Damien, give me the headlines for retirement.
All right, big picture. So the NEC data ratification goes up 17%, and in 2026, it goes to 18%. So that's a big side on the 401k. The other big news would be the market-based cash balance plan. The addition to that into our retirement structure is going to be a great addition.
So let's talk about those, starting with Section A, which is market-based cash balance plan. Walk through the structure of it and what it does for our pilots.
First, just kind of break down what market-based cash balance plan means, right? So a cash balance plan is a defined benefit plan, right? So the SWAPA 401k, it is a defined contribution plan. This is a defined benefit plan. In the original retirement schemes, you had traditional pension plans, which is not necessarily like this. And then later, the Internal Revenue Code came up with a new device called a cash balance plan. So it's just a funding mechanism, a way to receive monies.
So you mentioned NEC is the defined contribution. How does the profit sharing plan, what's that categorized as?
That's still a defined contribution plan as well. You basically, in the DC side, defined contribution side of the house, technically our 401k is a profit sharing plan. It just has an additional attachment to it that allows you to have 401k, your own funds go into it. Then you have your profit sharing plan that we all know today. Those two together are defined contribution plans.
All right. So this is a new defined benefit plan. You mentioned it sort of a grandson of the old pension plans. How does that get funded? And what are the protections for our pilots with the funding?
Yeah, so the first funding mechanism is when the plan starts up shortly after ratification, it will be 1% of your wages. So just like, you know, our 401k with the now going to 17% NEC is 17% on your wages. This is the same type of mechanism, right? So it's a 1% of your wages into the market-based cash balance plan. There's a qualified aspect to that. So wages up to a certain level can go into the plan, just like the 401k plan. And then when they exceed that on the top side, then it will come back as cash or go into the non-qual plans.
When you say the top side or the upper side, are you talking about the compensation limit?
Right. A compensation limit, you know, we always refer to it as a 401A17 limit. So for like next year in 2024, it's $345,000. So the amount of qualified funding going to the market base is up to 1%, right, of the $345,000. So that means a topped out captain will have $3,450 going into the market base plan. And then anything over that, of course, would come back as cash or go in that non-qual plan if you want to.
That overage is exactly how we handle the NEC today, as well as profit sharing, right? Anything over that limit.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Okay, so that's how it gets funded. You said that's one way of it getting funded. What's the other way of getting funds into it?
So shortly after data ratification, we'll start the process to get this 1% funding going. And then we're also going to send an additional letter to the IRS. It's called a PLR, private letter ruling. And it's just getting a blessing by the Internal Revenue Service to allow us to take one piece of our excesses that we have today to put it into the market-based cash balance plan. So when you fund your 401k and the NEC, so I'm switching gears here a little bit, but the 401k, you have the NEC going in, and then you put your pilot contributions in. There's only so much that can be held in that account. And then there's an excess piece to that. That excess piece is what we're going to ask for the IRS's blessing to basically defer into the market-based cash balance plan as well.
So you're saying in excess. We talked about excess earnings above the 401A17 limit, but this is excess contribution limits, right? What is that?
Right. So the way I kind of view it is technically under the Internal Revenue Code, anything that can't fit into the qualified funds is excesses. But I like to think of anything over that wage limit, that $345,000, is an overage. And then anything that can't fit into the qualified plan on the outside of the bucket, if you thought of it as a giant gas tank, right? would be the excesses. The NEC has excesses, but also the profit sharing plan has overages and excesses. So when I say that we're asking the IRS to bless that one excess, it's just off of the 401k NEC excess, not the profit sharing as well.
All right. So if I'm doing the math right, there's four sources of spill, basically two overages above the 401A17 and two excesses, both NEC and profit sharing for filling that tank, right? Is that another way of kind of saying it?
Correct.
Okay. And so of those four, we're going to take one of them, which is only the NEC spill or excess, and that's what's going to be diverted into the market-based plan?
That's correct. That's correct. And so the other way to look at it is if you don't want to put the money into the market-based cash balance plan, this excesses that we're talking about, you just don't contribute to your 401k, or at a bare minimum, just to make sure that you keep enough to fill your 401k funding. If it's at 17% NEC, and let's say you make up to the 401A17 limit that we're talking about, that means you need to put in at least 3%. That would be the just to make sure that you fill your qualified bucket on that. We're not talking about the over the age of 50 yet, but just in general, that's what we're trying to talk about. So you need the 17% NEC, 3%. You'll still get the 1% to the market-based cash balance plan. And so you technically have filled all your qualified buckets.
Okay. I think that's something that maybe the listener might not recognize or realize is that qualified tank that you're talking about, it takes 20% total of the qualified money to fill that qualified tank. So you're saying 17 from the NEC from the 20% total leaves you with 3% that you have to fund yourself or through payroll deductions. Is that how it works?
Right. The pilot contribution side of the house. Yeah. And that's, like I say, once again, that's assuming that you're making up to the 401A17 limit. The math is a little bit different when you're below that wage limit. Yeah, so the 17% NEC, 3%. If you want to have your excesses go into the market base, you need to fund more than the 3%, basically, is what we're saying. Then it will start driving into the market base cash balance plan. So today, under today's construct, if you fill your bucket, your pilot contributions, and then you have that excess come back, it comes back as cash, or it can be deferred in the non-qual plan, but the mass majority of people, it comes back as taxable cash. So what this mechanism is allowing you to do is not only fill your 401k bucket, which is tax deferred money, you also are now putting that excess money into the market-based cash balance plan where there's no taxation there either. So it's just a different mechanism, a different way of putting more qualified funds, putting that away.
All right. So let me see if I get this right. So today we are able to save more money by putting money into the non-qual plan by adding pilot contributions into the 401k, and that forces it to spill over. And if you opt into the non-qual plans, it goes into there. That's how it works today, right?
Correct.
Okay. So then going forward, once this gets implemented, that same process, the spill, instead of going into the 415 excess plan, would actually go into the market plan. So it's qualified money, which is better, but it's in the market-based plan, which we'll talk about in a bit, probably has fewer options or different options.
Right. Yeah, that's a big part is it's qualified, right? So you know the difference in the non-qualified and the qualified, if the company were to file bankruptcy, then in the qualified, they don't own any of that. They can't touch that. Non-qual would be if the company were to file bankruptcy, it doesn't have those protections to safeguard those where the qualified plans, they can't touch at all. So,
okay. And one other thing before we kind of move on from this, you mentioned getting a private letter ruling. Explain what that process is. And is it the same for the 1% and 2%? And is it different for this spill cash mechanism?
Yeah, the 1% and 2% direct contribution to the plan, we just need a DLR, right? A determination letter from the IRS. You technically can actually start the plan before getting the DLR, but the company, since this is new to them, this space is brand new. They never had a defined benefit plan. They wanted to have that letter first, which we can understand that. As soon as that letter is received, then they're going to start funding into the plan. We do have some safeguards in there. We'll cover that here in a minute once we kind of walk through the language. But the private letter ruling is sent shortly there after we sent off for the DLR. And it can be 12 to 18 months for approval through the IRS. And the other thing that we have to remember is once we receive the approval, because we don't know when it's going to come back, but when it does come back, we have to think about the timing for the next year. We'll have to receive it and then start up the excess piece, because we can't interfere with the current trust for the excess plan. So once a letter comes back, just as long as maybe we receive it in the summertime, they say, yes, you're good. Then when open enrollment starts that October of that same year, we just won't offer the excess benefit plan for the NEC excess specifically. You can still go in and elect the profit sharing piece to be going in the excess plan if you still want that for the non-quals, but we'll have to change that structure. So it kind of depends on the timing when we get that letter back from the IRS as well.
It is pretty complicated sounding. I think taking a look at that pipe diagram that we have on the website is really good. And I know that we're working on some videos that kind of show how this works. So I'm sure that if the listeners right now are listening going, I'm getting confused about NEC spill and profit sharing spill and non-quals, hopefully some of those visual aids will help. So I appreciate you trying to explain it. It's definitely challenging.
Yeah, the visuals are definitely going to help because it's going to be so many moving parts. But that's the complications that you have when you have high wage earners. Is you have to come up with new and inventive ways. And this is just one mechanism that we were able to achieve for our pilots.
I know you mentioned talking about it when we get through the language, but while we're here, what are those protections you mentioned about the PLR and DLR? You know, we had a similar situation back in 2016. We had the retiree health account that we were setting up, and that just sort of fizzled out at the IRS level. And we never received that benefit or achieved that. So how do we prevent that from happening again?
Yeah, so the company is all on board with the funding in the market-based. Yeah, we did lessons learned during the RHA startup. This time, though, as soon as it's ratified, assuming this ratifies, that 1% funding will actually go into a trust and is being set aside, waiting for the market-based to get the determination letter back from the IRS that we talked about. If for some reason, either SWAPA doesn't want to start it under the provisions of what the IRS says, things don't look good, we can go around, so to speak. And if we go around and we just cancel all of this, the NECs, then we'll just have the increases aligned. So we said that the first increase on the NEC was 17% and it's 1% in the market base. If for whatever reason we don't like it, we waive off and the structure fails, then we would get 18% NEC. And we were supposed to have in 2026, 18% NEC and 2% in the market-based. That means in 2026, we would get 20% just NEC. But on top of all of that, that money that we were talking about that they're going to safeguard in a trust fund, it would then be paid out as a one-time cash payment, which you would then get NEC on as well. So your money will be your money. That's what they've already guaranteed. It's in the language and we've said it numerous times in the notes and they are fully agree with it, but you'll get all that money back if the market-based cash balance plan does not start up.
So this 1 and 2%, that is on top of any company contribution otherwise. And the spill cash, as you describe it, is pilot deferring their own money into the NEC, which spills over. So that's not like extra money. That's just money management of money that you would have gotten either as cash or as spill into the non-qual.
Correct. Because, I mean, just to give you a little bit of a comparison, at Delta, they are putting away both the 401A17 and the 415C excesses and the overages that we were talking about. But if you think about it, that's all pilot money. We have a little bit of pilot money, but we're also getting company money. So that's where this is kind of different compared to the other plans out there.
And how about at American or United? Are either of those set up to have additional company money going in, or are those all just moving pilot money around?
That's all pilot money as well, both of those plans.
So let's just say the IRS comes back and says, sure, the 2%, you can do that. And then 6 months later, you said a year later, it takes them to come back and they say that spill cash thing isn't allowed, which I would expect them to say it would be allowed if they're doing it at the other carriers. That shouldn't be a problem. But if they did, would we still just have the 2%?
Yeah, worst case scenario, that means that you're still getting the 1% or 2%, depending upon the time frame, into the qualified account. And we'll talk about what you can do in distributions a little bit later, but you'll still get the qualified funding.
And then you also said that if it's decided that we're not going to get the market-based plan established, can the company make that decision? Can they just say, you know what, after a year, this is really hard, we don't want to do it, and pull out? Or does that rely on the association?
Relies completely on the association. The association has that determination.
All right. So we talked about where the funding comes from. Now let's talk about the structure itself. You said it was a trust. Is it one big pot of money that we all share, or is it everybody have an individual account, or how does that organized?
So when the market-based cash balance plan is implemented and it starts, it is one notional account. It's one giant account. So all the money is being lumped into a giant pot of money, if you will. The structure of it, though, is a 40-60 mixture, meaning 40% is going to be in equity and 60% in bond. That's a target mix. And so I would put this kind of in my more conservative. If I'm looking at all my portfolios, I would kind of consider this being more my conservative part of my allocation. But once again, like we said, it is all qualified money.
So you said it's one big pot of money. How do I know what my balance is? How can I tell what my benefit is?
It's one giant account, right? It's a notional account. So that's just how benefit plans work. And it will be funded monthly, right? So when you go onto the Empower website, you will be able to look at your account, but it's updated once a month. So not daily, right? Not like your profit sharing plan where you can watch it every minute due to whatever investments you have in there. But it will be updated monthly and you'll know where your account balances are. Like I said, it's on the Empower website.
Okay. So that's the structure of it and the credits that go into it. Now explain the market-based part of it. How does it grow?
It's growing because we have agreed with the company together that you're going to have an asset allocation mix of 40% equity and a 60% bond mix.
So pretty conservative.
Yeah. It's going to be a conservative mix. When you're looking at all your portfolios together, I would remember to have the market-based cash balance plan as my conservative segment of my asset allocations.
So one feature I think that's probably really important is the loss protection, or I don't know what to call it, but I guess explain to the listeners how that part works.
The big feature for a market-based cash balance plan is the preservation of capital rule. And so what that means is the contributions going in have to be, and these are your contributions that are going in, so it's either the 1% or 2% or the excesses that we're talking about. The company is on the hook for making sure that at distribution that they are at least what you put in, right? So it is going to be riding the market, that 40-60 mix that we just talked about, the 40% equity, 60% bond mix. It could have a negative balance at any time during the year if it was a really bad year, right? But when you go to receive those funds at, let's say, retirement, then the bare bones minimum is going to be what was put in for you. An easy picture here to think about is your total contributions were $100,000. At the end of your career, you know you will get at least $100,000. Of course, the expectation, though, is that you're going to have gains on those investments, that 40-60 mix. So you'll have the gains and the capital that was actually put in on your behalf. That's what you should get out. And hopefully you'll have more gains on this. But like we say, you know, you'll have at least what was put in on your behalf.
Let's put this into application here. So let's say I start with a $100,000 balance. And for whatever reason, I don't put any money in. If the market returns are $10,000 gain in the first year, $10,000 in the second, and then the market loses $30,000 the third year, how much money do I get?
In that case scenario, if there were nothing else contributed and you're retiring and going to take that distribution, they're going to guarantee $100,000, where essentially if it was a DC plan, right, it would have been a $90,000 balance that you would have had in that case scenario.
So that's sort of the company's risk then, is the downside of the market. They have to preserve the capital, but you get the benefit of all of the upside, even though it's a relatively conservative mix?
That's correct.
So what do you say to pilots who say, you know, I don't want to invest in something that conservative. I want to be in NASDAQ or some other high return type investment. Is there something we can do about that?
Well, while the money is in the investments, that 40-60 mix that we were talking about, you don't have any other control over it, unfortunately. The one big thing, though, that I would kind of be the foot stomper here is that when you turn 59 and a half, as a provision that we have in the contract, that you get to do a in-service distribution once a year, once you're over 59 and a half, and you can take that money in your market-based plan and transfer it to another qualified account, but it has to be our SWAPA 401k plan. So you can take that money, roll it right into the swap of 401k plan every year. Then you can manage it however you want to. And that is a fantastic feature, in my opinion, to the market-based cash balance plan.
So that 1% or 2% that the company's putting in every year, plus whatever money you divert from your NEC excess the next year, roll it right into the 401k.
Exactly.
And that gets around that 401k limit that we have today for DC plans, even though it's a DB plan.
Yep, because you're just transferring from one qualified plan to another. So that's why there's some easement on that limitation.
While we're on the topic, talk to the listeners for a minute about the NC's philosophy. Why go for a 18 and 2 NEC and market base? Why not just go for 20 NEC all the way?
Next year, the 415C limit is $69,000. And that's kind of the limitation that we were trying to dance around, was how do we get more qualified funding? Because once you hit the 69,000, of course, there's more there because if you're over the age of 50, but we're just kind of ignoring that just for this general conversation. When that pilot reaches $69,000, and it can be pretty quickly. And by having another qualified plan, especially with this 1% or 2%, you're just driving more money into the qualified space. In a perfect world, you actually would have a little bit of a lower NEC, but a higher market base. But we definitely wanted to make sure that we were competitive in the market with the 17 and 18 as Delta American United were doing on the NEC side. So having that additional company contribution on the defined benefit side does so much better for our qualified funding.
Anything else to add about the market base before we move on to the other retirement plans?
No, I don't think so. It should be a good mix. You know, when we first were designing this plan, we were thinking about, maybe taking some of the 401A17. We couldn't necessarily take the excesses on the profit sharing plan because it's not definitely determinable, but it is on the NEC side of the house. And so we tinkered with the idea, but just we thought this would be the most acceptable and would make the most sense for everybody as a whole.
All right. Well, with that, let's move on to the profit sharing plan, Section B in the TA. Any major changes to the profit sharing plan, at least on the high level?
On the high level, I would say that there was just one major change. The biggest one is today, you can, over the age of 59 and a half, every year, you can transfer your profit sharing plan balance to the SWAPA 401k. So once again, there's that magic number, right? 59 and a half. You hear that a lot in the Internal Revenue Code law side of the house.
What does that mean? Why that number?
I don't know where necessarily that number came from, but that's just a generally accepted number for retirement purposes. That is also the age when you can start taking 401k withdrawals and it not have the early distribution penalty, right? So that's where the 59 and a half, just the magic number for the Internal Revenue Code. On the profit sharing plan, though, was under the age of 59 and a half, you can now transfer your profit sharing balance to the SWAPA 401k, but there's a restriction there. Under 59 and a half, you get a one-time election. Over 59 and a half, which is current book, you can do it annually. So we just added that new feature that under the age of 59 and a half, you get a one-time transfer to the SWAPA 401k. The additional piece is you have to at least be 5 years vested in the profit sharing plan. So 5 years vested, under the age of 59 and a half, you can transfer at one time. And so that's a big add for our pilot group.
Probably most of our captains and a lot of our first officers don't get profit sharing contributions today.
A large majority of them, yeah, do not have monies going into the profit sharing plan anymore. That's a correct statement.
And explain why that is.
It does have to do with the wage levels and the amount that people are contributing to the 401k plan plus the NEC. A lot of times there's no more room for the profit sharing plan to put any more funding in there. So, you know, that money was put into the plan a couple of years ago, and now it's just locked in there until they hit the age of 59 and a half. Due to the CBA, you know, that transfer we were talking about, now this will provide them the opportunity to transfer it over.
And then before we move on from profit sharing, I do see that we changed the deferral, profit sharing deferral percentages. You know, each year we vote in the fall election to decide what we're going to defer. And I think so far we've always voted to defer 100% of profit sharing into the retirement plan, but we changed those numbers. Why is that?
Yeah, we changed them down. So they're now going to be 3.5%, 7%, or the full amount. Still giving the opportunity for people to make that vote, because we did see more people in this last election. It was still 100%, but it was a lower percent people wanting that 100% going into the plan. The reason we had to keep the election there, though, is because of the Internal Revenue Code, how the code's written. We had to do it as one mass election. We can't do individual elections. The only thing that you really get an individual election to is your 401k election, right? But the profit sharing plan itself, because of how the rules are set, we have to make that as one large group, that decision. The 7%, where that comes from basically, is in 2026 when we have 18% NEC. The 7%, if you add that together, is 25%. That really is the maximum amount of defined contribution plan monies that can go in together when you compare them together. So that's why we set it at a 7% on the high end.
Let's talk about the 401k plan. Any major changes to this in Contract 2020 besides the NEC rates?
The major changes really, as you said, were the NEC changes. Like we said before about the market-based cash balance plan not being implemented, what happens to the NEC. Those are the big ones. The smaller things would be more administrative, like showing the contribution schedule so that the member knows if they want to make a change to their pilot contributions, let's say between the 10th or the 24th, that's going to be applied to the next fifth paycheck. Things like that to keep the member aware of how the 401k plan works for them.
All right, so let's move on then to the last section, which is non-qual plans. I know we've talked a bit about them at the beginning of the podcast when we were talking about the 415 excess spill cash, and then we were talking about the 401A17 overage. There are three non-qual plans. Give us the headlines as to what those are.
Yep. So we maintain all three non-quals that we have today in our current book, and we have it in the TA. Of course, it's the Top Hat plan, also known as the 2005 Deferred Compensation Plan for pilots, the 415 excess plan, and the 401A17 plan. Big headline to all this is we just codified the investments, the distributions, how they work, and also rearranged it so it made it a lot more readable compared to current book.
So it's safe to say they function the same way. It's just a difference of funding mechanism for each of them.
That's the biggest thing, is just identifying, you know, the target date funds are the mandatory part for the investments and how the distributions work. The biggest change, though, was actually in the Top Hat plan. So you remember, as we just said, the Top Hat plan is a way for you to defer part of your retirement eligible wages. Under current book, you had to make at least $160,000 to enter into the plan. We did move that component. Now you have to make at least $240,000 in the 2023 year to be eligible for the 2025 year. That's just because of how when you do open enrollment, that's why there's a little bit of a delay there. But the reason for that is really supposed to be for executives. But we do have a select group. That's how the Internal Revenue Code looks at it. There should be a select group of people allowed into the plan. And so we do have to discriminate on what defines that. So that's why we have that threshold there. The company really wanted that upper threshold, which we did understand, but what we got in return for this higher threshold was the amount to go into the plan. So it used to be age-based related. So if you were, let's say, 45, you could have only $12,500 go into it. But if you were on the older side, let's say you were above 60, you could put 50,000 in. Now everybody can put in 50,000 regardless of age. So that's kind of the trade-off that we had for that.
All right, last question then. Can we say that this is industry-leading retirement?
I definitely think we hit the mark. As a matter of fact, I think we exceeded the mark, right? Because when we put out Flight Plan 2020, we had the market-based cash balance plan in there. We actually talked about the direct contribution from the company. So our retirement system, to me, far exceeds the mark of what we were originally going for, where the polling came in at. That's why I'm so excited about the retirement systems that we achieved in the TA.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check out the Contract 2020 TA education page on SWAPA.org.